Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Blackhawks Live. Tonight on Blackhawks Live, a new season, different faces, and the drive to win.
Jones high slot, fires, Patson, rebound, score! Connor Bedard, Donato to Nazar over the blue line, down the slot, he shoots, he scores! Frank Nazar on a breakaway!
Join Charlie Remiliotis as he dives into what's next for the Hawks. Here's Charlie.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
Welcome into Blackhawks Live. Charlie Remiliotis here with Jack Heinrich riding shotgun with me, as always, on this fine Monday night. There's still a little bit of light out, Jack. This is the second straight show that we've done where it's not pitch black from start to finish. I like it.
Yeah, it's a lot nicer, but I'm also confused at what day it is and what time it is after the West Coast trips.
Touche, and very confused at what time of weather it is, because last week it was 72 on Friday. I was outside in shorts and a t-shirt, and yesterday it was snowing sideways. So I don't know what's going on. This is the state that we live in, but hopefully the weather will start to take a turn. Got a fun show here for you. Let's get right into Connor Bedard, actually, because it feels like, Jack, Connor has spent a lot of time in the penalty box the last couple games for the Blackhawks, and not just the two consecutive 10-minute misconduct penalties that he took against San Jose and Vancouver, but also the minor penalties are starting to rack up. But let's go to the, let's kind of rewind back to the San Jose game on Thursday and kind of walk through what happened there, and then how it maybe carried over on Saturday night in Vancouver. Connor Bedard takes Hawks are down by a goal against San Jose in the third period. It seemed like Connor was kind of going back and forth at the officials because he was upset that there was a missed tripping call on him and Mario Ferraro, which, by the way, he had absolutely a case there that should have been called and it wasn't. And when Connor skated back to the bench, everything looked fine. Like, didn't look like he was jawing at the official. It seemed to be once he actually got to the bench that he said something. And us trying to piece all this together, it seemed like maybe Connor was warned about it earlier in the game, saying, you know, he was talking to the officials about maybe something else. And it got to a point where veteran Chris Rooney decided enough is enough. He gets hit with a 10-minute misconduct penalty. Connor, after that game, owned up to his part of it, about it, but also kind of seemed a little bit confused or surprised that he got hit with the 10-minute misconduct penalty, because I'm sure he has probably said much worse. And even Anders Sorensen said after that game that he's heard much worse. And so tough for him. And then going into the Vancouver game, by the way, Hawks lose that game. He feels probably terrible about himself that he wasn't available for the Blackhawks to make that final push in the final 10 minutes. So then going into the Vancouver game on Saturday, he probably has a horrible feeling in his stomach about how the San Jose game ended. And the last time that Bedard was in Vancouver, he did not have a great showing. So that's now two consecutive games in his hometown that didn't really go well. And he ends up getting slapped with a 10-minute misconduct at the end of the game on Saturday night. This one seemed totally like a one-off. Like, it was late in the game. Usually when the score has gotten away, they'll kind of just send guys to the locker rooms early. So in this case, it was 2.5 minutes left. Bedard joins a scrum after he takes a shot. Lucas Reichel crashes hard to the net. Derek Forbert looked like he started to go after Reichel. And then Bedard's trying to swoop in to help Reichel. And Philip Roenick comes in and he starts giving him the, you know, kind of a glove sandwich. And it basically was like a 5-on-2. And then Frank Nazar comes flying in trying to defend his teammates. And so that, it's kind of a one-off. I don't think there was really much to it outside of, you know, Connor swooping in to help his teammates. Connor Bedard did address the misconduct penalties in back-to-back games, though, earlier today after practice. And here is what he had to say in the exchange with the reporters.
I mean, probably just because there was a couple minutes left in the game, I guess he got everyone off, so I don't really know.
Okay, did they explain it to you?
No, I mean, there was 2 minutes left in the game, so I think that's why, but I don't know at all, really. So That's what I think kind of was his thoughts.
I imagine that's never happened in your career in consecutive games.
No, definitely not. I was kind of padding the stats a little bit there with the pins.
You left a little frustrated. Did it just add to the frustration that it happened in back-to-back games, maybe?
No, I didn't really care that like I got a 10 in that game. I mean, the game was over. It's not like, you know, I was going back on. It was probably last shift, so it wasn't about getting a penalty, you know.
Did you talk to Anders about the Sharks game? You know, like what was said, and like, did you guys come to it?
Nope.
All right, that was Blackhawks forward Connor Bedard talking about the penalties. Kind of made a joke out of some of the.
I like that. I'm racking them up.
Yeah, he's racking up the penalty minutes. I was actually just looking this up, and he had only 20. He had 28 penalty minutes in 68 games last year. Right now, he has 62 penalty minutes in 67 games.
Second on the team now.
He's on a point per penalty or penalty minute per game basis at this point. And he racked up 20 minutes over the last two games. But just your overall thoughts on the last two games, getting these penalties. Again, the San Jose game was the one that got the most attention. The one in Vancouver was just that four guys went to the locker room because it was end of the game, and the officials were just saying, get out of here because the game's over and we don't want this to escalate any further.
Yeah, that second one just kind of, it seemed like, I don't know how he got it, because it seemed like his helmet got pulled down and he was kind of fighting for his life.
Right.
Couldn't really see what was going on. But yeah, I mean, it seems like he's frustrated a little bit with how he's producing, and I think he's kind of battled the officials all year a little bit, and how he thinks he should be officiated, and he hasn't drawn a lot of penalties, I don't think, this year. So, but it's all part of a learning process, and he's probably trying to voice his opinion, and I guess the refs aren't having it from a second year player, second youngest player in the NHL, but I don't think it's reason for concern, and he seems fine with it, and I'm sure they talked to him about it. And I think it's punishment enough for him not to be out there when they're chasing a goal.
Right.
I think that'll put him in the right. Like, all right, I can't do that as much.
Yeah. And there is some sort of kind of this unwritten rule that if you have a leadership letter on your sweater, whether it's the captain or an A, you're kind of the buffer for your team when it comes to missed calls or just trying to argue with the officials. And Connor doesn't have that letter on his sweater yet. He will at some point. He's going to be wearing the C for the Blackhawks, but he doesn't have it yet. And so I do think that Connor maybe has been developing a bit of a reputation around league officials, that he might be a guy that likes to push back on calls if they don't go his way. And I do think, I will say this, I think Connor needs to be careful that he's not exerting too much energy into complaining about penalty calls, even though he's correct in the overall feeling of it. It's kind of wasted energy, and it's similar to what Sidney Crosby had done early in his career, where he was developing a reputation of like a whiner, and he was always complaining to the officials, and the opponents saw that, and they were like, okay, cool, we're getting under this guy's skin, and this is working. But I think over time, Crosby became so good at, like, opponents would cross-check him in the back or whatever, try to get him off his game, and he would shrug them off like they were nobody to him. And that got under the opponent's skin, that they were like, man, we're doing everything we can to try to get under his skin, and nothing is phasing this guy, and he's not complaining to the refs anymore. So I think over time, Connor will learn that. And actually, Blackhawks interim head coach Anders Sorensen gave a similar good answer when he was asked about Connor's recent misconduct penalties and some of the former players that also had those reputations. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think he's very mature for being 19, and especially with the amount of spotlight that's on him constantly. I'm really impressed with how he handles it overall. And I think it's human nature to maybe get to some points that he's gotten over the last couple of games here. I mean, the last game it was a scrum, right? Like that was an honest, you know, I'm kind of good for him. You know, he stuck his nose in there and stayed in there. So I think we discount that one. I think the one in San Jose, I think it's frustration, heat of the moment. You know, I think as a young player, I remember Sidney Crosby went through a lot of that. I remember Peter Forsberg coming into the league very, you know, mild manner off the ice, but once they got on the ice, it happens, right? They want to win. They want to be successful. They want their team to have success and frustration sometimes, but how to handle it. But, you know, he's aware and he's getting better at it.
Great quote by Anders Sorensen to really put that into perspective and referencing some of the players of the guys that he closely watched years prior as well in their early years. And I remember Sidney Crosby as a fan or in the early years, and Peter Forsberg, you know, going back, I don't even know how old I was when Peter Forsberg was watching, but to reference those examples, I think is noteworthy. And Jack, I do think a lot of the emotion that Connor is showing is because he genuinely and cares, and he badly wants to have not just individual success, but he wants to be contributing individually to the overall team success. And when the team success isn't going the way that he expects of himself and the rest of the team, he's going to show the emotion on his sleeve. And I don't have a problem whatsoever with it. I think that's has a lot of the greats that have played this game and just in sports in general, they show that. Like Tom Brady, I always think about how fiery he was as, you know, the guy's the greatest quarterback of all time. And he was always fiery on the bench and going at teammates because, but it all came out of love, and it all, even like officials, like he'd yap at them and he'd go at, so I don't know, like, I just think Connor wears his emotions on his sleeve. At some point, you do want to make sure that he's managing them in the right way and not wasting his energy complaining about calls or doing whatever. But I have zero problem with Connor showing that type of emotion.
No, yeah. I mean, it does show how much he cares. And going in the locker room after games, you can tell how mad he is when they lose, even if he's not talking to the media, if he's still lingering around. So, I mean, it is good that you know, at least, he's not so stoic. You're like, does this guy even care? No, it's the complete opposite. You know, like the loss has hurt him, and he's used to playing and producing and winning a lot. So this has been quite the adjustment the first 2 years.
For sure. And even in Regina, it didn't go particularly well for him. So it's been, you know, for him, he's probably just like, man, I just want to win hockey games. You mentioned the penalties too, that he hasn't been drawing as many. I mean, you're spot on in that. And I was looking up some of the numbers. So last year, Bedard drew 25 penalties in 68 games, which was tied for 46th in the NHL. And he missed 14 games because of a broken jaw. So if you kind of project how many penalties per game that he was drawing, it was about like 0.3. So if you project that over the course of those 14 games that he missed, he would be up to 30 drawn penalties, which would have tied him for 22nd in the entire NHL last year. Well, this year, he's played in 67 games, only 12 drawn penalties, which is tied for 186th in the NHL. So he has not been getting the same calls that he was last year. And that's got to be a growing frustration for him too, because there have been quite a few times this year outside of the missed trip call in San Jose from Mario Ferraro. But like, there have been quite a few calls that haven't been called against him. And I imagine he feels like he's not getting the respect, but at the same time, fair or not, it's one of those things that it's kind of like you have to earn those calls. And so eventually he will get the calls. But I think that has added to the list of the growing frustration for Bedard, that he's like, I'm literally not drawing any penalties. And when they are blatant, they're still not getting called. And so I almost feel like that's spilling over into the frustration as well.
Yeah, that's definitely it too. I mean, what was that when he got called for that one penalty against Patrick Kane? He's like, tell him to stay on his feet.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
a little glimpse into like how he's feeling. So, he's young. Like you said, he doesn't have a letter yet. So it is hard. But I think everybody knows he's the star player on the Hawks. So he feels like he should be getting those calls. And sometimes they miss them. And, I mean, the Hawks have battled offside calls all year and this with Bedard. So it is what it is. When you're at the stage where the Hawks is, you got to win on the margins because it's so thin, and if they don't, then sometimes it can go sideways quick. So hopefully with this youth movement that they have coming and some guys that are up right now, so hopefully it changes soon. But yeah, I think it's just part of the growing pains of a rebuilding team.
Yeah, I think honestly my bigger issue over lately has been the amount of minor penalties that Bedard has been committing.
Yeah.
Not the 10 minutes, because the Vancouver game, it was just a dumb 10 minute. I mean, it meant nothing. It was literally could have been anyone in that situation. The San Jose game, for sure is going to be a learning lesson for him. But I was looking at, you know, he committed two minor penalties against Vancouver, committed a minor penalty against Colorado, committed a minor penalty against Utah. So that's four Four of the last five games, he's been in the penalty box, and that's four minor penalties as well over the last five games. So he does have to do a better job of making sure that he's controlling his emotions in that way. Even in the game against Vancouver, the Hawks get a power play, and literally it gets negated 6 or 7 seconds into the power play because Bedard committed a penalty, and so then it went to 4-on-4 action. And so those are the kinds of things that you would... For Connor, the emotions are going to spill over into the game, but you don't want it to lead to a point where it's becoming an undisciplined. He's playing undisciplined, and then it's putting the team in a tough position.
Yeah, it is kind of happened. Even like right before the road trip, you'd see him go in a few times. So yeah, that's something you hope he could clean up a little bit. And I was surprised. Yeah, it has been recently. He's kind of been going in there a lot. I noticed that at the home games too, when you're sitting like, oh, Bedard's going in there. So,
yeah.
Hopefully he can clean that up, because you're right. That is a little bit more concerning than the 10 minute. I don't think we have to worry about him getting 10 minute major penalties. I think the minor ones, hopefully he could stay out of the box a little bit more. Because I do remember looking a few weeks ago, and his penalty minutes were like fourth or fifth on the team. I was like, oh, he's kind of getting by Patty Maroon, and now with the two 10 minutes, he's right there.
So. Yeah, he's really skyrocketing on the enforcer rankings of the penalty minutes. No, it's honestly, I don't feel like it's going to be a larger issue. But again, these are part of the growing pains of a young player and going through adversity really to this level for the first time in his entire hockey career, because he's just so used to everything being easy. And even Nathan MacKinnon was saying the other day, he told Mark Lazarus at The Athletic that, you know, he was basically the best player on his team at every level. And then when he finally went through some hardships in the NHL for the first time, it was a learning lesson for him, because MacKinnon, literally, it was like his first four seasons, he was under a point per game player. And even that year four, I think it was like he had like 35 or whatever it was. So no concerns, but wanted to kind of put a bow on all that from Connor Bedard. We got more to get to here on Blackhawks Live. That's coming up next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, Charlie Romeliotis and Jack Heinrich with you on this fine Monday night. We spent the whole first segment on Connor Bedard, kind of rehashing the last two games, the 10-minute misconducts, and so we'll park that. One of the guys that is still hotter than burnt toast is Ryan Donato, who has been on a terrific tear. I think has points in 14 of his last 16 games for the Blackhawks. Since February 1st, how about this? He is third in the NHL with 22 points. The two players above him, Leon Draisaitl, 25 points in 16 games, and Nathan MacKinnon, 24 points in 15 games. And the two guys below him is David Pastrnak at 21 points and Cale Makar at 21 points. So he is right there with among the best players in the entire NHL over the last 6.5 weeks. And I know in the last show, Jack, we talked about whether the Blackhawks should sign Ryan Donato to an extension. And quite frankly, I would be surprised if that didn't get done at some point before the end of the season. Because if the Blackhawks were confident that Donato was going to walk this summer, I think they would have traded him before that trade deadline and got whatever they could for him. Which, by the way, there was a second round pick on the table, which came out, which I know I was a little bit surprised, or I would have been surprised if there wasn't a second round pick on the table. So the Hawks ended up passing. They don't end up trading Ryan Donato. And I feel like if they would have gotten clarity that Ryan was going to test the open market, they probably would have traded him. But there did seem to be some mutual, both sides like each other. Like, I think Donato likes playing for the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks really like what Ryan Donato has brought. And, so Ryan Donato spoke about this on Saturday before the game, and it was the first time he actually kind of like addressed, all of this post trade deadline. So here's what he had to say about his future in Chicago and potential contract extension talks.
No, I'm excited. I think I voiced enough that, you know, like, I enjoy being here. We really like it here. So obviously it was a stressful time. I wasn't sure it was going to turn out, but I'm definitely very happy to, you know, still be here and, you know, help push this team forward.
Have you had any contract talks or anything?
I'd rather not get too into it. Obviously, I think Kyle's voice that we've had some discussions going on, and yeah, that's really all I'll say about that for right now.
Would you like to stay?
I would love to stay. Yeah, I mean, I've voiced that. Yeah, I think that, you know, ever since I've been here, it's felt like a second home to me. I've said we had our first daughter here and first child, I should say, and you know, it's been awesome. We loved it in Chicago, and you know, if things work out, I would definitely love to be here.
I think judging by the way Donato answered that last question, how he said he doesn't want to get into the contract talks, but when he was asked by Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times as a follow-up, would you like to be here, his eyes kind of lit up. He's like, yes, I would love to be here. And so I do think there is going to be some sort of common ground that is going to be met. And so, Jack, I would be surprised if there was not an extension done before the end of the season.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like, like you were saying earlier, if he wasn't going to stay, they probably would have tried harder to trade him. And then him being very open in the media too is like something different, because normally like the players, like, or players in general in all sports, like they hold the cards like, well, I don't know, like, you know. But him being like, no, I want to be here, it's like another guy that you want to bring in that wants to be here. And I mean, why not? He's having the best year of his career. So, and why don't you stay in the place that you had success?
Yeah. And when the Taylor Hall situation was happening, I remember he made it pretty clear, like, he didn't feel like he was going to be part of the Blackhawks future or whether he even wanted to be here for it. So you kind of saw the writing on the wall. But with Donato, he kind of lit up. He was glowing when he asked about whether he wanted to stay here. And so even Donato, like, signing the contract with the Blackhawks, like, I think the Hawks did an every shift with him at the beginning of the year. Might have been the first episode of the season. And he was talking about how, like, he wants to find a hockey home. And so I think the fact that Donato wanted to stay in Chicago beyond Friday's trade deadline just as much as the Hawks would have liked for him to stay, I think shows you how what both sides think of each other. We ended up putting out a Hawks click on WGNradio.com. Should the Blackhawks re-sign Ryan Donato? And we had three options. First one was yes, do whatever it takes. Second option, only at the right price. And the third is no, let him walk. Fortunately, Jack, we had 0% vote for no, let him walk, which, no surprise. But it did come closer than I thought about there for the other two. Was 60% said only at the right price. 40% says yes, do whatever it takes. And so it sounds like right now the Blackhawks offer to Donato's camp is 3 years at a $4 million cap hit. And I think the original offer was $3.5 million, so it went up to $4 million. I wouldn't be surprised if both sides settled within that range. I don't know if maybe Donato is hoping to get closer to five, or if he's hoping to get a fourth year while bringing down the AAV. I'm not sure, but it feels like that is kind of a fair range, unless Donato feels like the season that he is turning in, it is worth holding out for an extra $1 million or whatever that case might be, because he might be flirting with 30 goals and 60 points and having a career year. But again, I would be surprised if both sides didn't get this done, but it feels like, you know, my vote on that would probably be only at the right price. But I think the right price is going to be very reasonable for the Blackhawks. Like, I don't think the Hawks, it's like, do whatever it takes to get Ryan Donato. Like, if Donato has made it known that he's like, I want to go to market because I want to max out every single dollar, well, then if you're the Blackhawks, you understand the situation. But that's where I fall, only at the right price. I think 3 years, $4 million on the table for the Blackhawks is fair. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if it went to like 4.5 or whatever it is and that got the deal done.
Yeah, that seems fair. At this point, I said only at the right price, too. I don't think he is having a career year, and he hasn't had a track record of doing this consistently. So you're kind of buying into this guy's 28. He's about to turn 29, and he maybe is turning a corner. And it makes sense for Donato, too. He's kind of been bouncing around in the league. So, like you said, find that hockey home. But yeah, I think 3 for 4 is pretty fair, especially with all the cap room the Hawks have and with it going up. I mean, that's not going to tie your hands to go after somebody. So it seems pretty fair. And him saying he wants to be here, the Hawks are like, how much we value him, it seems like it's only a matter of time before it gets done.
Yeah, and you also, if you're the Blackhawks, you want players that want to be here. So if Donato is willingly signing up for wanting to be here for 3 years, the same way that Jason Dickinson, Nick Foligno, and Peter Mrazek all signed 2-year extensions last year, like, they were willingly signing up for this. So it's not like a 1-year situation where it's like, let me use the extra 1 year as a stepping stone to get to where I am, like, or to get to the next best thing. Like, so I think Donato wanting to be in Chicago is also an important part of the equation, and that I think the Blackhawks would really value in wanting to get this done. So we'll see where that plays out, or how that plays out. How about Artem Levchinov? I know in the last show we only had one game to go off of in the Colorado game, but he's played three games now. Unfortunately for the Blackhawks, they don't have a win to show for it yet. But boy, Levchinov has been a real nice surprise for me. I thought there would be some sort of growing pains, and there certainly are. I don't want to dismiss like he's been perfect, but the Hawks have not shown any reluctancy to throw him into the fire. In Vancouver on Saturday night, he led all Chicago skaters with 22 minutes and I think 39 seconds of ice time. Only Quinn Hughes logged more among skaters in that game.
Wasn't it only like 20 seconds more?
Yeah, it was like by 18 yeah. seconds. So it's like literally less than half a shift. And so I really like that the Blackhawks have been giving him a responsibility, the higher responsibility, and they're not sheltering him. But they've been doing that because he's been responding very well to those responsibilities. Like even that Colorado game, he started on the second power play quarterback. And then in the next game, he gets promoted to the first power play on the first power play unit because he did so well on that second power play unit, specifically that 5-on-3 power play where he was the only guy that was shooting pucks. So I've really liked his game. He did pick up his first career NHL point on Wyatt Kaiser's goal on Saturday night in Vancouver, but I've really liked the flashes that we've seen from Artem Levchinov in these three games that he's played in.
I have too, yeah. It's nice to have the Artie party here, and he made a good first impression, and I like how he was like, I'm not nervous, even though we all know he probably was a little bit, but he didn't really play like it, and getting thrown in with Colorado, that's not easy, and then that first shift or second shift, he gets his stick knocked out, and then he's trying to fight somebody, so he wasn't shy about it, which was good and what you want to see, and it's a good glimpse into the future, and I mean, this is why they picked him number two, and it did seem a little aggressive to push him this much, but he's responding, so that's a big thing to see going for the future, even if he goes down at the end of the year. But he getting like five games and he looked pretty good, that's really positive.
So the interesting thing about this, when the Hawks called him up, I had heard that it was just going to be a taste, so it was kind of get a few games and go back down to Rockford. But the more he turns or he strings together some strong performances, the more it is that the Blackhawks are probably going to like, all right, he deserves another game or two, or, you know, moving forward. And the interesting thing is, if he plays in 10 or more games this season, then the first year of his entry-level contract will be burned. If he doesn't, then it will slide over to next year. And so I don't know if there's some sort of baked-in, predetermined games where the Blackhawks are like, under no circumstance will he go beyond 9 games and have his entry-level contract burned. Or on the flip side, is it if the Blackhawks are like, well, you want him to burn the first year of the entry-level contract to get him to the second one sooner, similar to how the Blackhawks have been operating lately. But I think that's going to be an interesting discussion. I would be surprised if he hit the 10-game mark. But the more he strings together these impressive performances, you don't want the Blackhawks to kind of dictate things and like prevent him from sticking around longer than he deserves. So I think they're going to let that play out, but it's going to be interesting, the storyline to watch, that if he plays well tomorrow and then he's getting close to 10 games or we're like, he's sitting at the 6 or 7 game mark and you're like, all right, he's still playing well. Like what are the Blackhawks going to do? I'm sure that's going to be an internal discussion organizationally, because that's not something that's going to be like a flippant decision. It's going to be well thought out, that it's like, if we burn the first year of his entry level contract, this kind of impacts the salary cap moving forward for them, like not in a right. significant way, but you know, just to get him to that next contract quicker.
Yeah. You're going to have a few guys coming up too. He's already played what, 3, and then tomorrow will be 4. So, I mean, if he plays good tomorrow, and they have a few games this week at home, and then we'll see with that one road game. But yeah, if he forces their hand, maybe they think it's just better for him to learn in the NHL if he's playing this good. But it is an interesting dilemma, like especially the timing of it. Like you said, they called him up against a tough Colorado team on the road, and then now he's playing pretty well. Now he might force their hand. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. And they do have a lot of guys that are going to be coming up here soon, so it'll be interesting to follow.
For sure. All right, we got one more break to get to here on Blackhawks Live. On the other side, We got to do a Nick Lardis update. We got to update on my boy, my Greek guy.
Oh yeah,
he's been setting records in the OHL this season. We'll share what record that he's knocking on the door with in the OHL. That's coming up next right here on Blackhawks Live on 720 WGN. We are back here on Blackhawks Live, and I did not know that they were going to be playing this song. I don't know if this is for me or if it's for Nick Lardis. Probably, yeah, it's for Nick Lardis for sure, my fellow Greek, because we're going to do a prospects update on Nick Lardis. He has been tearing up the OHL this season, to the point where he hit the 70 goal mark a few games, or I think it was the last game, and he became the seventh player in OHL history to hit 70 goals, and he's at 71, which ties Eric Lindros for the sixth most in OHL history, and he is now one away from tying John Tavares's 72, which is the highest total, the goal total in I think 44 years. So 3 games left for the Brantford Bulldogs and Nick Lardis. Feels like a slam dunk that he's going to hit that. So he's likely going to become the first player in OHL history over the last 44 years to surpass 72 goals, and he'll likely finish probably in the fifth range. The OHL record is 87, which is Ernie Godden in 1980-81. So I don't think he's going to hit 87. He's going to need 16 goals in the final 3 games of the season. But Nick Lardis has been absolutely terrific for the Brantford Bulldogs. I will say, John Tavares, he was 16 years old when he scored 72, and Eric Lindros was 17 years old. So Lardis is 19. So he does have a couple years under his belt of in the OHL to kind of get to that point. But he's been so good for the Brantford Bulldogs. And I think if you're a Blackhawks fan, it really excites you about the potential that he could have with the Blackhawks. Because when you think about him as a third round pick, you kind of think of him more as a depth player, not necessarily like a cornerstone piece of the franchise. But the more he performs, and the one thing that I've appreciated about his game is, like, you see some of the goals that he's been scoring, they're not the same type of goal. Like, they're in tight, they're slappers, they're playmaking goals. He's got a lethal shot. I think the one, really the knock on him, is his size. But I've very much enjoyed watching the success of Nick Lardis, to the point where it's going to be really exciting for Blackhawks fans to see him next year, when likely you're going to start the season in the minors, but then what his ceiling could be at the professional level.
Yeah, I've seen some things on Twitter saying like he's now like projecting to maybe be on a top line, which is great for a third round pick. And it just seems like every day that the Hawks are playing, Brantford's playing, and then he's scoring a goal. Like, halfway through the game, you're just like, oh, he scored. Like, yeah. When I was filling in for you, it's like, oh, he already got 70. Like, I said in the pregame, he was close, and then he got it. But, yeah, it's been fun to see, and he's very intriguing. I remember him being in training camp a little bit and playing in some preseason games, and the season he had is just, that's kind of the stuff you want to see in a rebuild. It's some unexpected guys coming out, and hopefully he's one of them that could be here soon. He's a very exciting player, and I think a lot of people are excited to see what he can do as he moves up.
All right. Got something to tease here. Coming up on Thursday, join me and Kevin Powell at the Barn Hockey Bar in the West Loop on Thursday, March 20th. We'll be there with a special sports broadcast from 5 to 7. Our live broadcast at the Barn Hockey Bar this Thursday, March 20th, is sponsored by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Find more info at WGNradio.com/events. Unfortunately, we will not be in a cabana doing this sports show, but we will be at the Barn Hockey Bar, and that's always a great spot to do it. I actually saw Spencer. He was in there in Vegas with us. We had a great time together, but looking forward to doing that with Kevin on Thursday before the game from 5 to 7. Come join us. Come say hi. Come enjoy the pregame festivities with us. And that is the first, going to be the first day of March Madness as well. So we got some brackets, some buckets, some bets. So maybe we'll see you on Thursday. That's going to do it for this edition of Blackhawks Live. Our next show is going to be next Monday at 7 p.m. We will talk to you then. Have a great night, everybody.